Do we have any apologies? R. McKee, Robert Burgess. Any other apologies?
Terry Andrews.
No? Is that it? Just a few chairman's remarks. If I could just...
Treasurer Ocean Hall.
Thank you. Some other chairman's remarks. Just want to congratulate our council and staff for the number of very successful Halloween events we had. The Hallowtide in Newcastle, which we all ended up like down to drops, and the Newry Twilight Market, which was very successful. And the fireworks display on both times are just to be seen to be believed. On a sadder note, just like the council would offer some sympathy to the family of David Blinsky, the young Polish lad who tragically lost his life in a crash at on the Hilltown Road near Kilcoo. And just on that, Gerald Tinley was speaking to me that it would be a good idea of our council formally invited DFI to discuss that particular road junction, because there has been quite a number of accidents on that site, and I think we need the DFI to examine the fabric of that road to see is it the surface that's doing it, is it the camera that's doing it, or maybe just have it set aside as an accident black spot. So we do that, our council will do that. We'll offer sympathy with the family of young David, and we hope that the rest of the young people who are involved in that crash make a full recovery. Okay, any declarations of interest? No? Item number 3, the action sheet arising from the meeting held on the 7th of October. You all have them there in front of you, I hope. Page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6, page 7, page 8, page 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16. Are you all happy enough? Any issues arising from proposed by Councillor Terry Hardy, seconded by Councillor Gary Stokes? You're happy enough to move on. Thank you very much for that. Item number 4, the minutes of the council meeting held on the 7th of October, which was Housing Executive. Just go through it again for accuracy. Page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 8, am I right here? Yeah. 19, 20, 21. So we have a proposal and a seconder for those. We're happy they're actually enough. Proposed by, and seconded by Commissioner O'Murray. On to, the special council meeting now. Sorry, page 42. Housing Executive. We're wrong at the start. Just go through it again for accuracy. Page 1, 2, 3, and 4. I'm happy enough for that, the accuracy of it. Those who are at it. Can we have a proposal in the seconder, please? Proposed. Councillor King. Councillor Gallagher. Seconded by. Do we have a seconder? Councillor Owen. Any matters arising from that? No. Those who are at it, happy enough for that. Thank you. We'll move on. Item number 6 is the ERT. Just hold on there while I find it. Let's just go through it again for accuracy. Page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15. We're happy enough that that's a true and accurate record. So we have a proposer and a seconder, proposed by Mr. Dermot Cohen, seconded by Rushy McGrew. Do we have any issues arising from the ERT meeting? Lena?
Thanks, Chair. We note on the minutes there, it says Public Health Authority. I think I should read Public Health England. Just want to note that myself and Councillor Mason, we met with concerned 5G parents and local residents this afternoon. I think it's important as a council that we look at all the options that are coming available for 5G, and as a council act responsibly and preparing for it as if and when it does roll out, if that becomes the case. I think it's also important that all peer-reviewed information should be included and not particularly to rely on Public Health England and the WHO. We really do need to see a comprehensive and detailed report analysing the risks and benefits of a 5G rollout.
Thank you very much for that. All right. Patrick?
That was on a similar note to Una there on 5G. Yeah, sorry, I missed the end there exactly, but I was going to propose that we hold off on allocating any money on that or submitting any bids until officers have carried out that full risk assessment that I asked for in my original motion, and that councillors can make a decision on that when we are cognizant of all evidence on both sides and that the document is fully endorsed by council. I think there is a lack of strong evidence on both sides, perhaps, at the moment, and we shouldn't rush into anything until it's decided upon. It is the fact that the 5G frequency is more intense than 4G and other technologies, and that has given cause for concern. Different agencies will say that 5G is a potential carcinogen. Now, not necessarily on the highest possible scale, but I feel the issue here is that we are subjecting people to it against their will. They will have no choice whether or not they are receiving the 5G frequencies in their backyard, at their kids' school, that sort of thing. If there is any chance of harm to ratepayers, I think we need to adopt the precautionary principle with 5G. I'd also say, why are we not investing in fibre optic broadband instead? There are no health concerns or risks there. I understand there was money set aside in the DUP confidence and supply agreement to develop more fibre optics, so where are the plans around that? And finally, given the significant concerns and strong public issue interest on this issue, I think we must do our due diligence before taking it any further.
Thanks, Chair. Probably just to address the first round of the fibre, there is a full fibre NI programme in place, and with the aim to roll out full fibre across 10 council districts. There's a consortium in place, and it will be to provide full fibre to council buildings in the first instance. So there is a significant programme of investment for full fibre across Northern Ireland districts. With regards to the 5G, the funding bid is to allow us to carry out that detailed research within the full fibre NI consortium across 10 councils to determine what the risks and the health risks are and to provide a full and detailed bid for potential for funding. It's no commitment that full fibre or that 5G will be provided, but it's to be in a position to be able to bid for it whenever we've done all the research and all the work. Thanks.
Chair, if I could just say as well to members that the 5G isn't a devolved matter, and the DCMS and Public Health England are on the lead on 5G, so the Department for the Economy refers to them for guidance. And in response to a written parliamentary question on assessments of the effective rollout of 5G technology in health, DCMS indicated that a considerable amount of research has been carried out on radio waves and no negative effects on public health are anticipated. But setting that aside, we have, as per the ERT paper and set out by Connor, agreed to do a significant amount of research before we would commit any further.
Just before I take Henry in, could I just remind the people at the back, if you don't mind, please, there are sets of protocols that you must adhere to when you're in the council chamber. All of us as councillors have agreed those protocols and principles, so please be mindful of Quieter, please. Thank you. Henry?
Yeah, Chairman, at the ERT meeting, I had actually raised a number of concerns that I have with 5G and the unknown aspects of it. It's not a minute, or not one word of that recorded in the minutes, Chairman. Chairman, also, I'm concerned because we have received these legally based letters putting us on notice that if there are problems in the future that we could be held liable. Now, I know that Maria sent a letter out suggesting that, you know, not to worry about those letters, but I would like the council to give me an absolute assurance here tonight that I do have some form of public indemnity against any ill effects that would be proven in the future, because it's very, very important. And I want to know, does our council actually have, through our legal insurers, some form of indemnity that the council won't be taken to court? And Chairman, I go back not terribly long ago, whenever workers, plumbers, shipyard workers in Northern Ireland were being told not to worry about asbestos because it was a totally inert material that you had no reason to worry about. And then all of a sudden we found out it actually was a material that's caused terrible debilitating disease. And there's a whole series of legal suits. It really has through industry and a lot of businesses into turmoil. And I want to know that for our own assurance, for the council and for me as an individual councillor, that those legal indemnities are in place. And just the motion that was approved at ERT, it's contradictory, because Part A says, to officer to review the impacts of 5G and seek further guidance from Public Health Authority, DCMS, and that's fair enough, and a detailed report analysing the risks and benefits of 5G rollout within the district. But then Part D, or Part C and D, we're actually committing up to £10,000 to the coordination of a 5G community and funding applications. So those two things can't actually sit together. You know, we can't actually say we're not just happy with this at the present time, and we want more information, and we want more research and peer-reviewed papers and that type of thing, and then say that we're going to actually start spending money as of tonight promoting this within communities. So we need some clarification, because I am worried. I think those letters of notice do carry a legal basis and could come back to haunt us in years to come. And I think we should be putting the safety of the community first, and not just following blindly the big corporate business. Thank you, Chairman.
William. Chair, thank you very much. And agreeing, I think, with previous speakers, in relation to Councillor Brown, I think before we lend any support to 5G or support any funding going towards 5G, I think we do need a full risk assessment. Now, a number of people are concerned on medical grounds. So they are. There's other people concerned in relation to other issues. I think before this council commits anything, they need to have a full risk assessment. And I do agree with Councillor Brown when he states in relation to 4G, 3G and fibre. Money has been made available through the confidence and supply agreement with the Conservative Party in relation to broadband right across the whole of Northern Ireland. I think we should be looking into that more and making sure that money is spent in areas where it's needed, particularly rural areas such as our council. I think we should be going that route rather than going full flow into 5G and supporting 5G. I remember a number of years ago, and it's maybe 15 years ago now, 16 years ago, when the telecommunications masts were starting to go up, and Orange was the main provider here in Northern Ireland at the time, and the first meeting ever held in relation to objecting to them was actually in Killyleagh, and that's maybe 15, 16 years ago. A lot of concerns
was raised then in relation to the mobile mast. And that there was actually a professor come up,
order, please.
Come up from Dublin into Dalton. So he did, and give his analysis on that. So I think a lot more research needs to go in to this 5G before we commit anything.
So William, you're going to second Patrick's proposal that there's a moratorium on any spend until
yes,
a full and frank of investigation and the implications of 5G. That's okay, thanks. Willie, you next? No? Commissioner Henry?
Chairperson, I was going to second the motion, but he's already done.
Okay, good man, thanks.
Yep, go ahead. Chair, no, I was just wanting to sort of speak there as well and say that we have also received a lot of concerns about the 5G, and I think it would be right that the council does take advice and does take legal advice and takes health advice on this, but at the same time, there are parts of this district, parts of my constituency, such as Spa, that don't run with doesn't have any signal at all. So it's about how we sort of weigh up the two, and the sort of yes, we look into the health concerns, but at the same time, we take on board that we must be doing all we can to improve the signal, because if we can't get suitable Wi-Fi and fibre optic to these places, then we need to try and look at all technology, because there's homes and small businesses which rely on being connected to the internet and rely on having a fast and reliable speed. But yes, I do understand what these people at the DMAC are saying, and I've looked at the stuff that I've been sent, I've looked at the letters, and I agree that there is health concerns out there, that's right and proper, that the council do all the can to fully investigate this.
Thank you very much for that.
Well,
thanks, Chair. Sinn Féin totally support fibre to the premises, broadband rolled out. And indeed, Newcastle is one of the 29 locations across the UK set to receive faster internet connections from Openreach. So that work is being undertaken, where it's hoped that 95% of our population will have fibre optic broadband made available. In regards to the original motion that we proposed in the ERT meeting, it was clear at that motion that a full health and environmental impact assessment will be carried out before we commit to 5G technology and rolling it out. I think people are getting mixed up. We're not testing the technology. The technology is proven. What the proposal is in regards to a collaborative approach between different sectors and looking at how they can improve their work streams. For example, there's a number of test cases in our pilots and across the water in regards to smart tourism, for example, where they looked at augmented reality and virtual reality and technology, and it was in Bath and Bristol. And that was to look at how you would improve that sort of tourism product. Others in regards to smart farming projects and the sector coming together. And again, health, improving health and well-being in the community. These are other types of projects that have been explored. And that's the type of proposals that we're talking about. We're not talking about do we agree with the 5G technology as of yet. That's why we need the best advice to come back to us as a council, so we're informed to make a full decision at that stage. But not just an environmental impact assessment, we also have to have an environmental impact assessment brought back to us as well. And when we have all that material and all that accurate information put in front of councillors, all the councillors in the room, we will then decide on what course of action then we will take. And it's as simple as that. So people are sort of confused of what they're talking about in regards to how this council is going to move forward. If the motion or the proposal is saying that you want to delay our council area becoming a top digital area, if you want to slow up that progress. While Belfast is rolling 5G out at present, there's lessons to be learned there also, and working in a collaborative way with them as well. But as group leaders, and some people said it was a secret meeting, group leaders met with the minister responsible for the communications from across the water in Westminster in regards to the 4G rollout, precisely the stuff that people were talking about earlier. But at the end of the meeting, I did ask in regards to the 5G technology, and if there was any information and any assistance that could be given to our council in regards to looking at the health possible health impacts, but also possible environmental impacts, that would be made available to us. And he, at that meeting, clearly said he would do everything he could to get as much information as possible to ourselves as a council. So I and Sinn Féin were content with the original proposal, where we're going to have them health impact assessments and environmental impact assessments before us, before we commit to the future rollout and bidding for funding. This is about just looking, will we get ourselves in a position to bid for the funding when it becomes available, as we did with the 4G rollout as well.
Declan?
Yes, sir. Sure. I'm sorry going in this late. But, yeah, just echoing again what Councillor Willie Clark has just said as well. Like, when we were taking the decision at the ERT, we were very mindful of what the public have been saying, and in our proposal we built in those concerns and in fact addressed them at the meeting. And like, we can't sit back and let this area fall behind in terms of development and opportunities that come by its way, and on the notion of the notion of rumours, etc. I mean, we did say the fact, and I researched it myself, that there's sufficient government research being carried out and all these new technologies, and everything, I think I said at the meeting, everything that comes along, you know, there's a certain element of the unknown in it. But if we stop and rejected everything new that comes into society, nothing would ever move forward. And, you know, I think also made the point is the fact that you can never say anything is absolutely, totally and utterly safe until you prove otherwise. And that's the same with absolutely everything in this life that's new. So I think we built insufficient parameters into this here for our council officers to come back, and I will expect that they will do that. And I think that we're taking the correct route, and any other proposals to this here would be contrary to what the committee was, but also be detrimental to this council going forward.
I bring Dorina in to answer Henry's concerns over the emails and letters he's been getting.
Sure, just to pick up two points that you raised specifically, Councillor Riley. The council does have public liability insurance in place. Now, to be able to give you an absolute assurance regarding those legal letters, it's a matter that I refer to legal services and come back to all councillors on that. It's not something I can give you an absolute assurance tonight, but we'll refer the letters to the legal department and ask them to look at them for you.
All right, thank you. Thanks, Chair. Just to clarify, the 10,000 for each consortium member will be going towards. There's no funding available at this moment in time. That money is to carry out the research and to be in a position to submit a funding bid if a call for funding is opened by DCMS in the future. I know there was a funding bid closed at the end of October. We're never going to meet that, but this is to allow us to be in a position to carry out the necessary research and be in a position that if funding does come available for 5G test beds down the line, that we're in a position as a consortium of 10 councils in Northern Ireland to make a funding application. It's not Newry, Mourne and Down District Council. It's the consortium will be making the funding bid, but at this moment in time, there is no call for funding. So it's just a bit of clarity on what the funding is there today.
Thank you. Henry and Patty, your lights are on again. Is it a different issue or the same issue?
Same issue.
I'm not going around the houses again. So we've already, the council made a decision now that we, there's a moratorium in any spend as we get all these.
Point of order, Chairman. Councillor is entitled to come back in whenever other people stop speaking.
What was that, Henry?
It's a point of order, Chairman.
On what? On what?
On this issue. You can't suppress us having another.
You've had your 15 minutes on it, Henry.
No, we haven't.
But as you say, I'm happy to have your 15 minutes.
Order, Chairman. I want the point of order checked. You cannot suppress discussion on an important issue like this. I know Sinn Féin down in the south, they're totally opposed to it, not here they seem to be. Don't know whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, but over the border, they're totally opposed.
We have only after agreeing, Henry, that we have a moratorium on any spend until all those implications.
Here's the point of order. Can I get a base not
point of order? You're not seeming to get the message, Henry.
Yeah.
What is your point of order?
The point of order is, Chairman, that you cannot stop a councillor coming in for a second time.
No point of order, I'm sorry, Henry.
It's in the code.
Why have you got your light on, Patrick?
I made a proposal. I think it needs some clarification because I don't think there is support unanimously for
there
that
is.
Proposal. No, there's not.
All right, well, we'll check. Okay.
Chair, just for clarity, there was a proposer and seconder that we would not agree to any more funding until the research had been carried out. And the proposer was Councillor Brown and the seconder was Councillor Walker. So we do need to just check if all is in agreement with that.
We're all agreed?
No, I thought so. If I may clarify my proposal, it might help.
Go ahead.
If I can propose it, as my colleague to my right rightly points out, points A is in conflict with points B, C and D, to authorise, to commit and to allow Newry Moreland Down to take 5G development further. Therefore, I propose that Council only proceed with point A to carry out the health and risk assessment and scraps points B, C and D until a point at which Council can consider that risk assessment. That is the proposal.
Although that's completely different from what you indicated the first time.
Not really.
Completely different.
So the proposer has now suggested or changed to that we just proceed with point A and exclude point C, C and D. So the proposer has now moved or changed has changed their proposal to that we now just proceed with point A at the exclusion of points B, C and D. And
the court of
the proposer and seconder from that.
The court of
and is everybody in agreement on that?
The court of vote.
So we'll probably have to go to a vote then, sure.
Chairman, I still haven't got clarification from the Chief Executive on my point of order.
The standing orders say that if a member raises a point of order, it is the chair's discretion to rule on the point of order and will not be open to further discussion. And that's at point 19.10 in the standing orders.
So that's contradictory as well, so a lot of nonsense. So it is.
Standing orders, and you agreed them at the
start
of the year.
Approved by council.
You agreed them at the start of the year, Henry. Sorry, John. John,
sorry. Thank you very much, Chair. Just a point of clarity. I've just heard Connor saying that the money that was being allocated via point C was to complete research work. Would that be then exploring the health impacts of 5G and looking for further guidance? Is that what that fund would be for them? Or can it be for?
It is for that purpose, I understand, and also the purposes of examining whether 5G is even appropriate for use in this district.
Thank you, Chair.
So I think we have to go to a vote, Chair.
That's the money,
yes,
sir. That's the money.
Okay.
Chairman. Chairman.
I go to a vote here, Henry.
Yeah, but I would like to request a legal opinion on the information we got from the Chief Executive. It's totally unacceptable, Chairman.
But on your point of order. They are the standing orders of standing orders, which you agreed to. So now you want to change them tonight? You want to change them tonight? Right, the recorded vote was asked for there, so.
Okay, Councillor Andrews is absent. Councillor Brown? It's an apology. Councillor Burgess is absent. Councillor Byrne? Yes. Councillor Casey?
Yes.
Councillor Clark? Yes. Councillor Kern? Yes. Councillor Devlin? Councillor Dorn?
Yes.
Councillor Enright?
Yes.
Councillor Gallagher?
Yes.
Councillor Gibbons? Yes. Councillor Hanlon? Yes. Councillor Hannah?
Yes.
Councillor Hart? Yes. Councillor Hardy?
Yes.
Councillor Harrell's absent. Councillor Kimmins?
Yes.
Councillor Larkin?
Yes.
Councillor Lewis?
Yes.
Councillor McGuinness?
Yes.
Councillor Malone?
Yes.
Councillor Mason? Councillor McAteer?
Yes.
Councillor McAvoy?
Yes.
Councillor McKee is absent. Councillor McEvert?
Yes.
Councillor McMurray?
Yes.
Councillor Mulgrew?
Yes.
Councillor O'Hara?
Yes.
Councillor O'Murray?
Yes.
Councillor Owen?
Yes.
Councillor Riley?
Yes.
Councillor Rowan?
Yes.
Councillor Savage?
Yes.
Councillor Sharvin?
Yes.
Councillor Stoops?
Yes.
Councillor Taylor? Councillor Tinley?
Yes.
Councillor Traynor?
Yes.
Councillor Walker?
Yes.
12, 4 and 25 against.
So, Chair, that was 12, 4 and 25 against, so the proposal is lost.
Right, any other issues arising out from the ERT committee meeting before I move on?
We'll just ratify the ERT minutes
stand then. Yeah. So, still, we need another proposal second for the minutes again, do we? The minutes stand. Right, lovely. On to item number 7, the minutes of the SPNR committee meeting held on the 17th of October. Page 1 is for accuracy, page 2, page 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, page 8. Could we have a proposal and a second? Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you. Proposal and a second for the SPNR committee minute. Yeah, propose for accuracy. All elected members, please pay attention. Proposed by Councillor Michael Larkin, seconded by Sean Dorn. Any matters arising from them? No.
Yes.
We're on to number 8 now, Active and Healthy Communities. Your light's on.
Yes.
What's wrong now?
Thank you, Chair. I'll first off take an opportunity to disassociate myself with that sort of comment. Completely not on and disgraceful.
Who's comments you talking about?
The matter.
Excuse me. Who's comments you talking about? Patrick. Who's comments you talking about?
This is on the item relating to Newry Rainbow on page 6.
Hold on a minute. You apologise for somebody's comments. Whose comments were it?
The comments that we just heard.
I know you brought them in.
I didn't bring them. I don't know them. They came of their own accord.
And you're talking about what now, sorry?
This would be page 6, Newry Rainbow.
Oh, we're going to have to go into committee for that.
For that, I'll propose that.
We're going to have to go into a committee for that before we discuss that.
It's page 6, it's the Newry Rainbow, SPNR.
Sure, that's an in-committee item. It would have to be discussed in committee,
yeah.
So we would need a proposal.
Both by Councillor David Taylor. Yeah, it is passed, right? Is it SPNR?
Yeah.
SPNR, we're on. We're on SPNR. No, they were proposing seconded. I had moved on looking for proposing or seconded for SPNR minutes, and we got that. And it's just matters arising from SPNR. Right? That's it. Move on in 2 minutes. No, matters right. Sorry.
Councillor Tinley did.
Councillor Tinley did, you? And who's
Sean Dorn. Thanks very much, cousin, for reminding me. You want to speak on SPR, Patrick?
Thank you, Chair. Yes. It's on the Newry Rainbow issue. We'll probably
go we need to go in committee. We have a proposal from David Taylor.
Chair, would members be in agreement to review all the other minutes and then come back to go into in committee at the end of that? Is that okay?
I'm okay.
Yes?
Okay.
So any other matters on SPR?
Gary?
Yeah, just briefly, Chair, just item 147, just a point of clarification maybe from the Chief Executive. Just, Chair, the decision we're taking here tonight is consistent with the Council's decision made in December 2017.
Yeah, Chair, the Council agreed in December 2017 as per the notice of motion, which I don't have the wording of, but it's regarding the development of the Albert Basin, and this is in line with proceeding on with that development.
Thanks, Chair. Just enough of the terms of reference for the consultants will be consistent, Chair.
Happy enough?
Yep.
Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Okay, well, happy enough to move on now. Mickey, what's your lead on for?
There was an item on it to do invasive species. I mean, I've got there a meeting, and it's probably not Michael's committee, but I was speaking to Roland beforehand as well that a proposal I made out of
it.
Oh, you're still an SPNR, are you?
Yeah.
All right.
Pay attention, Mickey, will you? Pay attention, Mickey. Any more matters arising from the SPNR to move on to active and healthy communities? Right? Information for accuracy, page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So we have a proposal and a second for accuracy. Leanne, proposed by Leanne, second by Sean. Any matters arising from active and healthy communities?
Chair.
Sorry?
Yeah. Okay. Just on the item about the Carers Alliance, I know Councillor Brown had brought the motion through Council. We discussed at the time about the recommendation to delay that to April next year to allow us to budget. I suppose in hindsight we're thinking, what sort of a budget are we talking? Because there is a chance that we could actually bring revenue to council if more people then decide to join the membership. So I was wondering if maybe for next month we could ask for a report to say what sort of budget we're talking, and if it's fairly minimal, maybe we could review that kind of delay till April if it's something that we could factor in. Just thinking about it in hindsight might be worth looking at, because we might actually get more people joining in the meantime rather than it's a cost to council, so it's worth checking that out first.
Okay.
Okay.
Quite happy to do that, Chair.
Okay.
Yep. Thanks, Chair.
What are you on now, Tim?
Same issue. Carers Alliance. Me and Liz are broadly on the same page here, I hope. But my issue is that there was a motion passed that agreed unanimously to bring through that concession immediately. And that seems to have been watered down at a subsequent committee. I don't know why any councillors or officers didn't speak up at the time the motion was passed to say why there was a problem bringing it in immediately. I feel that we've made an overcomplication of what is quite a simple decision, really. I mean, there's not a lot of carers currently using the facilities. Feel free to refute that statement if you wish, but I understand from speaking to a lot of carers that they feel priced out and not able to afford it. But by immediately allowing them concessionary rates access to the facilities, there would be no cost to council. We would simply be letting more people use the facilities for free. So I don't understand where these concerns around the massive gaping black hole it would leave in our budgets come from. I don't know how or why there is a significant need to carry out staff training around this. Surely it's a very simple case of editing
a couple of forms that other people in receipt of benefits would fill out and then sending around a circular email to staff to make them aware of the changes. And finally, in terms of marketing this concession, I'm all for that and advertising it to carers, but that doesn't mean we can't immediately give some carers access to the concessionary rate and carry out the marketing campaign whenever. So I think I want to review what we have there in terms of holding off till April, bring in the concessionary rate right away, and if we need to, we can do the marketing for it in April. That's my proposal.
Do we have a second for that? Do we need a second for it?
Chair, I've already committed to bring the report back next month if the councillors are happy with that.
Yep.
Yeah, it'll be a report that will the council will then make a ticket decision on. Yeah, we will look at the cost-benefit analysis of that, the cost, the loss of potential income against the increased income that has been referred to, and we'll bring that to the council for consideration so as they can make an informed decision based on all of those cost and income analysis, and then we'll be able to at the next council meeting implement it immediately if that's.
Well done, Liz. Michael.
Thanks, Chairman. It's just in relation to the meeting, there was an issue on or an item on the invasive species, and I raised the item of hogweed and Japanese knotwood, which we have in places across our district, and I know particularly in one area in Warren Point. And it's just that a lot of times we find these places are in no man's land, nobody's claiming ownership of them. I know from a council perspective, if it is in our land, we deal with it. But it's to see, can we as a council speak with the likes of the housing executive and other bodies who would be responsible as well, to see can we come up with a policy between us all that would effectively deal with the issue. Now, I'm not saying that we go out looking for it everywhere, but where it is near housing developments, near schools, town centres, etc., that we do try to come up with some sort of a forum with them other agencies to deal with this here. And possibly bring a paper back. I know it's probably touching more in Roland's department than Michael's department, but if we could look at that.
Okay, Roland. Roland.
Yeah. Yeah, as officers, both departments will look at that. We're quite happy. I think the report that went to AHC had suggested that we would try and coordinate a response across all of the public sector departments, so we're quite happy to do that.
Same issue?
I do know that this is an issue, and the difficulty is council won't. I've had an example in Kilif where the infestation started on our site where we had put infill to create a picnic area and then spread to private land. We fixed our area, but the private land is still infected and it's not registered, so no one's responsible, so it's just spreading up the coast. So we do need those sorts of situations where there isn't a public sector owner, but that someone is identified to deal with it.
Thank you, Chair. Just following off the comments that have already been made, I think it was actually the old Down Legacy Council. I know that DJ Morgan within this council did superb work in terms of Newcastle with the Japanese knotweed we had on the council owned lands and did little workshops in the town to invite people forward. So there's a really good bit of information and knowledge within the council already through DJ.
Thank you very much for that. Mara,
different issue?
Yeah.
Same issue.
Well, same issue here. You like that another thing?
No, just to tackle what Councillor Davin said, the Down Legacy Council has done, you know, great work in regards to Japanese knotweed in particular. But in Islands Park, there's still a problem with Japanese knotweed, and that's a council facility. Beside the bridge, there's a lot of Japanese knotweed. So this can be looked at.
All right. Separate issue, yeah. Separate issue, go ahead.
Yeah, no, just on the Wi-Fi and community centres. It's a thing that's been raised for a long time in the DEA forum, and Steve Gullion anyway, and I had asked Michael at the meeting just to clarify about the community centres, and just we received an email from Michael just outlining, and was delighted to see that some of the FMA community centres were going to be included, including Dorsey and Cullyhan and that, that we were sort of talking about in the sleep on NDA. So thanks a million, Michael. That's good news.
Okay, happy enough. On to item number 9, Minister of the Neighbourhood Services Committee. Page 1, page 2, page 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So we have a proposal and a second for accuracy. Glenn, proposed. Second for Terry Hardy. Any matters arising out of those neighbourhood services minutes? No.
Chair, can I just remind that during that meeting, Councillor Clark, Hannah and Councillor McKee declared an interest in item number 0842019. So could I ask that they don't propose and second these minutes?
Still happy enough with a proposal and a second, we are. Was proposed by the second by Sean Dorn anyway. Alright, Glenn. Your planning committee. You in the planning committee, Jacqueline? There you are.
Catherine.
Okay. Matters arising, any more matters arising?
Just one subject there, the report on the provision of new bus shelter in Jones, we've already got it on at the bottom of it.
Chair, sorry for interrupting, Councillor McAteer. Yeah. Councillor Owens can't propose because, well, she will be the chair of the meeting. Councillor Hannah actually took her position that night on the committee, so she doesn't hold a position on the committee. So can I ask for another?
Councillor Hart says it's requested of a Green official to investigate removal of the stone, very violent, stone wall inside of the bus shelter in the old Warren Point Road, at the bottom of the Chapel Hill. Could I just say that the sighting of that on the roundabout there, as one who uses that road quite often, not alone would I talk about removing the stone side wall, but remove the whole lot of it and put it somewhere else, because it is potentially causing an accident. Because I've seen numerous occasions where, I know people shouldn't do it, but it's causing a tailback on that corner and people are passing the buses that stops, that's the thing, stop. So whatever, and I saw quite a couple of very near crashes, witness of the staff, that's when your hair's going up. So I would, with in liaison with some of our staff, maybe to try and locate that somewhere where it's maybe safe, more in a better area, just when we are, when that proposal is on board, and it's not denigrating.
Maybe do a conversation with the residents group.
But I think it's even dangerous for them as well. It's extremely badly located. So I'm just saying that if they are considering that, also consider an alternative only a few feet away or whatever, but not right on the corner. Like, it's madness where it is. And it wasn't a fault really originally, because the island was coming in as a part of the traffic jam scheme, but it was placed in a very bad place. So I'm just asking off to have a look at that.
Council will take on board what you're saying. Happy enough with that. On to item 10, extracts from the Minister of the Planning Committee. So we're happy enough with that. Right, we can go. Do we need a proposal in a second?
Put back in that committee for next year.
Right. Proposal in a second, we'll go back in the committee for topics. Proposed by a second, right.
Committee, just for the members of the public and for the tape, officers answered questions regarding the Mary Rainbow Community grant funding posed by councillors.
Thank you. On to item number 11. Let's talk tourism. That's the National Tourism Forum. It's in the Great Southern in Killarney on the Friday the 8th of November.
Yeah, Chair, we would suggest if Councillor Mulgrew was interested as Chair of the Enterprise Regeneration and Tourism Committee this Friday to go to Killarney, that would be a suggestion, just maybe for attendance.
Yeah, I propose Councillor Mulgrew.
Thank you.
Plenty of seconds. Item number 12, NAC.
Chair, again, the members of the NAC are Councillor Rowan, Councillor Casey and Councillor Andrews, so it's perhaps whether they are interested in attending the conference on the 22nd to the 24th of November, and if we just record that, and then they can advise.
Could I propose Councillor Andrews would like to attend that proposal.
Yes. Chair, we'll speak to all three of those members.
Sure, I understand. It's Councillor Burgess.
And Councillor Burgess?
He's the NAC executive, isn't he? I know that. He's already from.
So, Chair, we'll check that and we'll go back to the councillors on the NAC and if they wish to attend, then.
Councillor Burgess is a member of the NAC, I think executive as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. Items of correspondence now 13, 14.
Yeah, sure. So those items of correspondence you have in front of you, there's no matters that I wish to raise, just if anybody has any queries on ourselves. So that's item 13 through to 18.
Second.
Yeah, I'm just in response to item 13 on the issue of animals circus, I note the department is here's response. I'm just wondering, would that have influenced, or should that influence our motion? That you know, where we're not granting any license, does that actually make ease the matter in the sense that there are inbuilt legislation there to on the Welfare of Animals Act, you know, so that it actually may prevent circuses coming to town. And at the end, the balancing side of that is that we may not want to deprive our area of the old tradition of circuses as we see there, and there seems to be the department has. There's always the fact that, you know, there are veterinary inspections carried out in line with the legislation.
Chair, the council's notice of motion was proposed, seconded and voted on and is a decision of council and would have to be reviewed after 6 months.
Yeah. So, Chair, could just mark that over 6 months and in light of this letter coming back on the action sheet. Thank you.
Happy enough to rest them. Okay, who's up there? Una?
Oh, yes, thanks, Chair. I'm just in relation to item 17 and the correspondence we received back from Pengelly with regard to the early diagnosis of bowel and breast cancer motion. I just want to record my disappointment in his response. I don't see why we can't have trial in each area, that it has to be exclusive to England, and that we should really be trying to push for a pilot scheme here in the six counties as well with regards to both bowel and breast.
Do we need a second for that today? Yeah. Second by Chair Hodge, right.
Chair, we'll correspond with them again just on that matter.
Okay, go on to the motions now. First one here, there's four altogether, total. One, the flight ticket one, it's going to be referred to Neighbourhood Services. If the person is bringing the motion, you can address the motion tonight, but it'll be debated in Neighbourhood Services. Can I?
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, no, look, I've already had a chat there earlier on with the council officers, and they've agreed to have a meeting with me to have a wee discussion about this, but others agreed anyway that the council agrees that the fly tipping is an unwanted blight on our district and creates an unnecessary burden on public resources. We requested the neighbourhood services utilise Clean Neighbourhoods and Environment Act 2011 to actively identify, pursue and issue fixed penalty notices to those who are responsible. Furthermore, we agree that council should issue a press release advising of no-nonsense proactive approach to illegal dumping, using local press to publicise our public community centres and their opening times that we collectively agree that this is a designated area of natural beauty and the council should be doing all within its power to attack and deter those that are responsible.
Second for that, and it'll be referred then to Neighbourhood Services.
Thank you.
Second by you, Governor. Excuse me, item number 18. Notice of motion, 11 plus transfer test. Councillor O'Hare. What is it? Somebody else.
Right. John, okay. Thanks, Chair. This council notes the work of Martin McGuinness in abolishing the official 11-plus exam. The continued practice by schools of administering unregulated transfer tests. The Right to Education report on the profound mental health impacts which transfer tests are having on children, including issues of sleep, loss of appetite, crying, anxiety, depression, and not attending school for a fear of a test. The Council calls on the schools to end the use of transfer tests and put the needs of children first. Council further notes the findings from the Right to Education report. 60% of young people said the transfer test was bad for them. 66% of young people felt selection did not make them more confident nor more able. 62% said decision makers did not listen to young people's ideas. 92% of teachers felt transfer testing had a significant negative impact on children's mental health. 88% of staff said transfer testing did not enable children to reach their full potential. 1 in 9 children are estimated to experience mental health problems at some point. Children who pass the transfer test but who don't get the A grade still believe they have failed because it isn't the right grade which gets them into their school of choice. Also, children who get the A grade and are eligible for a school of choice may not get to go there because they don't meet the school criteria, such as other siblings attending the school or their name too far down the alphabet. Mental illness is the largest cause of mental health and disability in the north of Ireland, and the levels are higher anywhere in the UK. It is estimated 45,000 children, plus young people, here have a mental health problem at any one time, and more than 20% of young people have suffered significant mental health problems by the age of 18. Just like to go on and a wee bit further here. We passed a motion there or around that about circus animals. This is about our children here at 10 and a half years of age. So, thanks, Chair.
Can I have a second or that? Leon.
Yeah, Chair, thank you. I wasn't coming to second it, but sir, I was going to want to speak against the motion. Certainly, it might have been seen as a progressive act by the late Martin McGuinness in bringing this forward back in, I think, 2002. But like many of Sinn Féin's ideas and actions, they're ill thought through, and the outworking consequences of it now is total mayhem within the primary transfer section, where people are now, as a result of that particular ill-thought-out action, are now having to face up to 2 tests, which, if you look at the counsellor's figures, surely exasperates the problem and the discomfort felt by children, parents and everybody else around. There was nothing compulsory in setting these tests, just as there was nothing compulsory at setting the 11 plus. You had the option to opt out, and that option is still there. The current situation is not an ideal one, but it was brought about by the Councillor's party, and with the total failure to come up with any resolution or way forward since that. So that's gone on a hell of a long time. You also must remember that most schools who do encourage their pupils to take the transfer test consult with their parents, and it is there's figures up in your own locality, and I'll quote your own school, who in Ballymahery Hilltown, who in the month of August voluntarily brought their children in to get extra voluntary work done on their transfer test. So right around our own area, all the the vast majority of the primary schools are engaged in this process at the moment, and I think that it's another ill-thought-out motion coming to council, seemingly to placate. I don't know who, but certainly it has not come with any resolution at all. So That's what I have to say on that. I think that there's still free choice there, and I would hope that at some stage or other there will be some sort of resolution that we put in place that we want to make a strong fight together again. But in the meantime, I couldn't support this particular motion.
So are you proposing that we don't raise the screws?
Yes, sir.
Do I have a second of that?
Chair, I'll second that.
Right, do you want to speak?
Yes, I want to speak. Yeah, no, sure. Just on this motion on 11 plus. Now, this motion is typical of Sinn Féin's approach, which is driven by ideological dogma. And as indeed they abolish something without first working out what to put in its place. The effectiveness of this Sinn Féin approach is that 17 years after the late Martin McGuinness abolished the 11 plus, academic selection is still going strong. Indeed, more pupils are sitting the transfer test than when were state run. Academic selection isn't right for every school, every pupil or every family. The level of demand for it will vary from area to area, but we shouldn't ban the opportunity for schools to use it as they wish. Banning it entirely would send us down the same road as England, for with comprehensive education around 7% of families send their children to private schools. Whatever the flaws of the current system, we would be replacing selection by academic ability with selection by ability to pay. Nobody likes doing tests, but it is an inevitable part of life. The motion flies in the face of reality, as instead of withering on the vine, thousands of families still voluntarily enter their children for the 11 plus exam. If we are looking something about the stress of exams, maybe we should concentrate on what will actually make a difference. For example, encouraging the two rival bodies to have a single agreed test. The steps taken by Education Minister Peter Weir to allow primary schools again to prepare children for the test, thus creating a more level playing field. If we are to tackle underachievement, then selection at 11 is a convenient red herring. The real focus needs to be on early intervention and preschool. If you haven't done anything by 11 years of age, then most of the chance is missed. This is a pre-election stunt by Sinn Féin. The council has no control whatsoever over this issue, and given that the 11 plus has flourished over the last 17 years since the late Martin McGuinness abolished it, while people like academics listen or not, it is here to stay. The DUP will not be supporting this motion.
What party is Peter Weir? Charlotte?
Chairman, I will be supporting the motion, and I thank Councillor O'Hare for taking it. Not to say I'm a wee bit taken aback and disappointed at the two previous speakers there that have went for the messenger as opposed to the message. Councillor O'Hare spoke very passionately there about the fact that children not yet 11 years of age were at the core of this issue here, and whilst there is no ideal solution, I don't think there's a councillor in this room who doesn't know some child that could relate to the sentiments expressed by Councillor O'Hare and suffered from some of the negativity highlighted by Councillor O'Hare in relation to these exams. Those percentages are out of the right to education report. Sometimes you actually need to see them, Chairman, to be reminded of them. The children not yet 11 years of age or on the receiving end of the decisions taken by others, they have no hand act or part in the decisions that are going to affect them. And it may well be a situation that the revised situation is, I think Councillor Hannah said, 17 years old. That may well be, but it's no more right now than it was 20 years ago or 30 years ago or closer to 40 years ago when I was doing it. So I know there's no solution here, but on sentiment alone, I agree with the motion, and I'll be supporting the motion. Thank you.
Chairperson. I'd like to respond to some of the points made by Councillor McAteer, for instance, where he's making it into a party political issue. This is about children. It's about the lives of children here in Northern Ireland. Really, and Henry, completing the number of people who sit the tests with support for the test. Glenn, then. He's sitting behind me. I know large numbers of parents whose children have had to sit this test in order to be able to access their local school. And they don't support it. They do it because they have to do it, not because they want to do it. They know it's wrong. All international educational reports on this subject have resoundingly been unanimous in the fact that selection in education is wrong from every point of view, most especially from an educational point of view. It's quite extraordinary that an SDLP person would speak, a Social Democratic and Labour Party person would speak in this manner supporting selection. It's disgraceful. These tests are being foisted upon the people of Northern Ireland by unelected and largely self-appointed boards of governors who are acting against the wishes of the vast bulk and majority of the community. My only criticism of this motion is the fact that it's simply not strong enough. Calling for schools to end isn't sufficient. We should be writing to schools to tell them that if they're looking for funding or if they're looking for support of council in any aspect of their curriculum, they would first of all need to assure us that they aren't continuing to support selective education. This council should only be supporting schools who are reflecting the vast overwhelming bulk of opinion within the community and are reflecting international evidence and reflecting on the fact that none of the top 20 countries in the world who are tested on academic excellence have a selection in their education. Fortunately, in the Irish medium education sector, we don't have selection. And I would say to you that one of the best parts of the Irish medium education system is the fact we don't have to put our children to this monstrous test. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. We broadly support the motion. With a few proposed amendments, really. We would like to make the said motion. I mean, do you want me to read said amendments or do you want me to just crack on with... I'd like to acknowledge, it wasn't just Martin McGuinness, it was actually the legislative action of Minister Catriona Ryan that actually got rid of the 11+. We also want to acknowledge the unregulated private tuition industry, which has further augmented these societal divides. Also, just want to rename, I couldn't find the right education report, but I did find one from the State of Human Rights and Academic Selection Northern Ireland report by the Participation and Practice of Rights. I'm not sure if that's the same document or not, but if it is, that we would like it to be named to that, if that's probably okay. Those are the general ones. I can email the party leaders or staff if it's correct. But it aren't any consequences. I mean, being in opposition to something can be a very noble position to take. However, if the working's out of your position, lead to multiplying the ministry in the first place, then perhaps in the next election, the opponent question the original action. That's not to say that, again, that the actions of the DUP in tacking on continued right to maintain selection shouldn't also be attributed to the current unsatisfactory situation which we find ourselves in. Instead of no single testing body, it has become two. Two Saturday tests has multiplied into potentially five. Multiplying nothing into something is kind of an ironic prelude to where we find ourselves now, actually, in another all-consuming issue. But anyway... That's not to undermine the impact of testing on child's mental health. There are many other reasons which support against arguments against selection. It damages the primary school curriculum. The creation of which academic selection adds, again, it creates the self-fulfilling prophecies of success and failures. Despite the statutory requirements, the separation of our children when schools are, the arbitrary separation of our children when schools are to deliver the same curriculum. And also it perpetuates social selection, which is damaging to society. By not acknowledging the test in the school, that has led to the growth in the private tuition sector. In schools, teachers can monitor the work that is going on, provide honest feedback to parents. By not acknowledging the test, it forces parents, if they can afford it, to supplement the child's preparation by external coaching. All of this must undoubtedly add to the stress of the household as a whole. That is not to say a test within school is wrong, rather it is that selection based on testing is on. All schools should serve their local communities and make whatever provision is required for the children they serve. Alliance believe also in an all-encompassing review should take place regarding our education system as a whole, of which this report will no doubt feed into. We'd actually like to highlight the, it's also the myriad of reasons why we should get Stormont up and running again to sort of tackle these issues head on. Thank you very much, Chair.
As a mother of a child coming towards this age, I'd just like to say that, Councillor, I'm really grateful that you have highlighted this issue here in Council tonight. It's a really horrible time in a child's educational life. I've watched close family members go through complete turmoil during this transfer test time and the lead up to it, and the children's mental health is being severely affected. We should not be standing by while many parents are forced and stuck in a position of having to put their children forward to do these tests. I've also spoken to numerous teachers who are witnessing every day the pressure these children are under. As a council, we need to support the end of the use of transfer tests and for the sake of our young people. As Councillor McMurray alluded to there, Katrina Leanne aspired to every school should be a good school.
Yeah, I'm delighted as well to see this motion come before council, and fair play to Jerry for taking it. I know he has seen firsthand some of the nightmare scenarios that young children have to go through. It's on the record. I'm a primary 7 Arangashap teacher in the Gaelscullen Cross and Glen, and I see it firsthand. The school that I teach in doesn't teach for the transfer test. We don't support the transfer test. We don't talk about the transfer test. Transfer test still exists outside of primary school. It exists outside the parameters of the education system. An idea being floated by grammar schools who wish to go fishing in primary schools to get the brightest and what they see as the most talented children out of a community, take them out of a community and put them into a grammar school, promising them a better education, a better go at life or whatever. It was described by Declan as ill thought out. I can say as a teacher that even way back then, the idea behind it was to create an equal platform for all children. So it was referred, the document Every School a Good School was referred to, which was brought in by Katrina Rowan. But every child is a good child, and every child is a capable child, and every primary school is a good primary school. And compounded then by Together Towards Improvement, another document that was aimed towards every school improving in their standards and that there. There's no crisis in it. It was referred to that there's a crisis being created, that there's these two tests now. No child is forced to do a test. The primary schools, most primary schools, actively encourage their children not to do the test, to go and support their local secondary school. I know in Cross McGlen, in the primary school that I teach in, we have a stream for children to go through our nursery, through our primary school, to St. Joseph's. So the vast majority of children take that. Kildungan pointed out Irish medium education. We have a stream through the Neeskull, through the Gaelscull, and on to College of Katrina, St. Catherine's in Armagh, which is another non-selective school. The opportunities for children in those two schools are every bit as good as in a school in Newry. I'll point out another example of an excellent school, an excellent secondary school, is St. Paul's in Bessbrook, where St. Paul's in Bessbrook in the last 10 years has totally transformed itself, and the children sitting exams, GCSEs and A-levels, are achieving really, really highly. Worst case examples in the right across the north are schools being allotted extended schools budgets because they're situated in areas of social deprivation. And in our case, we use our extended schools budget to have after school football and have after school cookery and ICT classes within the school. In other schools, they hand the teachers the extended schools money to stay after school and do tuition for the transfer test, which is an unregulated test, which sits outside the parameters of the Northern Ireland curriculum. So the curriculum being a broad and balanced curriculum where children are crudely taught to read, write and do maths and world around us and ICT and all that, the test doesn't go into that. The test doesn't teach, doesn't assess children on their personal development or mutual understanding or their thinking skills or capabilities, personal capabilities. It's just a black and white on the day test. Children in our school have went into the test with standardized scores of 130 and have got C's and D's in the test. Some of the brightest children that I've ever taught have went and got C's and D's in the test because they talked about being sick with nerves in the car, crying going into the test, having pins and needles in their faces and in their hands trying to do the test. So I totally get where Jerry's coming from. I think it's a ridiculous situation to put children in. I've always said it, and I always will continue to say it, and grow more to Jerry.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. And I don't think there's anybody in this chamber, right across all political parties, that's speaking for academic selection. And I hear, you know, Cadogan completely picking up Declan wrong, and I'm sure he's able to qualify his own points. But I mean, the abolition of the test was the right thing to do back in 2002. Nobody is in any doubt of that. But you cannot simply, 3 days before suspending an assembly, you cannot simply abolish the test and leave a void there. Because, you know, the passage that this report is looking at, and this is from the call was made in 2002, is because there is no way with the abolition of the 11 plus of moving people from primary school into the grammar schools. Now, you can talk about getting rid of grammar schools, you can have that bigger conversation, but that's a conversation that needed to be had from 2002 to the present day through Stormont, through Westminster, through talking to ministers and whatever. Sinn Féin had three education ministers in that period and could not come up with an alternative to it. Now, Declan has said at the end of his statement there that until we find something in order to replace this with, until we find a system that doesn't put the parents under pressure, we are going to still have a situation where unregulated tests are going to be used. Because parents are looking at the scores that people are getting in grammar schools. And if you want to look at some simple stats from all the reports that are out, go back to the Assembly report in 2016 that looked at this. Of the grammar schools, 95% of students in grammar schools are receiving the five good GCSEs, which is GCSE, A star to C grade. 95%. So that puts parents into a position where they're seeing that stat. Compared to over the last 10 years, from 2006 to 2016, it was outside grammar schools and secondary schools, it was 35%, which has now risen to 45%. So you have a huge discrepancy there. And it's people from areas of high deprivation. If you look at the people that are in grammar schools, 17% of people in grammar schools in 2016 in that report are from kids that are qualified for this preschool meals. And that's the measure they use for areas of high deprivation. So we have a huge imbalance here. And nobody is disagreeing with that. But to simply say, scrap something and then don't replace it, that is the problem. And I think there's mixed messages coming out from the executive and the assembly from 2002. What we disagree with, and we cannot vote for this motion coming in its current form, and as Declan rightly said, we're looking at the council noting, fantastic, note the report. The report is very welcome. The report was published in July, and I read it along with the assembly report and the previous reports from Martin McGuinness called for the Buns report to be tabled in 2002 to be published. The work of Martin McGuinness in abolishing the official 11 plus exam doesn't begin and end there. I mean, this came from a Labour government commission report in 1998 following the Good Friday Agreement. It followed on, yes, Martin McGuinness did establish the Buns report, and that report, after that we had the Costello report. Because Martin McGuinness called for the abolition of the 11 plus 3 days before the Assembly was suspended. We then had direct rural ministers. We had Jane Kennedy MP who established the Costello report, chaired by Steve Costello. And those proposals were accepted then 2 years later. And we know because people had said that Katrina Ruan came in 2008. And this is following Labour government provisions that were tabled to not select people in secondary schools based on academic ability. They asked that from the Labour government in 2006 that you would look at a system where you look at a pupil profile over 2 years. So it's something how pupils performing over 2 years that the parents can look and use that for going forward instead of sitting down and testing kids at that age, which is cruel. So that then followed on to 2008. The recommendations from Katrina Ruan were not even debated in the Assembly. They simply weren't debated. Now, when you're going on, the recommendations were implemented by Katrina Ruan, and Sinn Féin as a party, when they had the education minister post for 3 times, they were reversed by the DUP. I welcome the recommendations. The SDLP welcomed the recommendations that were tabled in 2016, or 2015, sorry, in September, that you do not have primary schools teaching the kids for the transfer test, because that's actually putting credence on the transfer test. So I welcome that. But then you're pushing people into the private sector. And I really disagree with that. And I'm speaking as a private maths tutor who tutors up to 40 kids a week. I refuse to do the transfer test. But you know how many people I have now next week for the transfer test? 4. How is that possible if I refuse to do it? Because I have parents coming to my house who are actually in tears that their kids' friends are doing the transfer test. They're going to be the stupid one. They can't go to the school with their kids or with their friends. And can you just please do it this one time for the sit down and do 2 tests, the GL or the AQE, which is 5 exams. And you look at the maths end of it. It's 45 questions in 45 minutes. And you actually teach people how to answer a question without fully answering it. So if you're doing a sum, once you see you're close to the answer, go for the multiple choice. I mean, what way is that for teaching maths? We're talking about trying to look at the Far East, and we're looking at how STEM subjects are taught. And we are teaching people to go into a selection test, to go into a grammar school, where you're giving them multiple choice, where you tell them not to work out the real question. Just get so far so you can guess the answer. This is coaching kids into ways of how to get through a test fast, and it is really wrong. So we did welcome 2015, the changes. But then that has been reversed in 2016 by Peter Weir, who said that schools can go and teach this, and academic selection should be allowed. So we are sending mixed messages from government to the schools. And for us then to bring a report and not take onus of the responsibility as politicians, whether, you know, above us, and I know there's no assembly now, us not taking responsibility, noting that we've abolished it, noting that we've left a complete void, we haven't dealt with the issue, and then we call on the schools to end use the transfer test. I mean, completely disingenuous. What is this motion saying? Write out to all the Board of Governors and say, stop using the transfer test. You know what we're going to get back from them if we write to the Department of Education as well? We're going to get, well, you came with recommendations in 2015. We implemented them. You just reversed that in 2016. They're implemented. That's where we are now. We need to get back in to Stormont to deal with issues like this. And I will finish on this point. We keep talking about, you know, and there's an election coming up, and you'll hear, you know, obviously the B word, Brexit, but you'll have health, education, housing. People are suffering. They sound like buzzwords, but when you're talking about education, yes, you're talking about supplies in schools as well, but you're talking about major issues like this. You're talking about people from deprived areas that, and the stats show us, going into grammar schools, are being treated less fairly than those going into the grammar schools. And I'm using that 95-45% comparison. The NI average for the 5 good GCSEs is 60%. Why is it? The grammar schools are pulling the average up. That is not acceptable. But we need to get back in this government and deal with that issue. And our party was calling for a commission to be set up, time-bound, to come back with an alternative to academic selection. It is not good enough to abolish it and then say to the schools, stop using it. Because how on earth are we going to get our kids to move in the selection process? The grammar schools still exist. Listen, if you're talking to me and a pupil of a grammar school, let's talk about abolishing grammar schools. That's a bigger argument. Don't put this on to the schools and the Board of Governors and simply wipe our hands after all the inaction over 15 years. So yes, the SDLP absolutely stand by the report. I've read the report in its entirety. We do not stand by slapping ourselves in the back and congratulating on the work of abolishing. That was the start. The real work is replacing it. And I think we should get back into the Senate to do that. So I have no problem if there's an amendment coming from the Alliance Party that we write to the Department of Education saying that this council is concerned and notes this report and asks that, you know, there's some direction written out to schools to move forward in this. But you know what you're going to get back? And I'll finish on this note. We need ministers and get back into the Assembly and make these decisions. They're decisions that affect the future of our kids, and let's not pass the buck on this. And that's why Declan was heavy-handed at the start.
I passed my 11th class and went to the Abbey, and all I got was a ton of books, a great thrashing, and told teach yourself. David.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, we won't be supporting the motion presented to us tonight. while still seeing this, probably recognise that the 11 plus was a blunt and far from perfect way to measurability, we don't oppose academic selection in some form or measure. As already has been mentioned, the final 11 plus took place in 2008, which stemmed from the decision that was taken by Martin McGuinness. In those 6 years, however, there was no preparatory work undertaken, and the transfer system inevitably turned into organised chaos. That's nothing worth noting or applauding, as the motion appears to suggest tonight. What's even more shameful, however, is the fact that 11 years later, there still is no sign of a permanent resolution. Instead, thousands of children have been sitting on regulated transfer tests, and primary schools are increasingly finding themselves in the difficult position of being trapped between needing clear parental demand for selection and a policy vacuum that is growing more pronounced with each year. And there's no sign, particularly with the lack of devolved administration at present, of that changing any time soon. So as I've already said, we won't be supporting the motion tonight, and hope others will follow in that same.
Chair, I'm just going at this here as a registered child minder's point of view here. I get paid for 9 months of the year. Summer holidays are off. Even the summertime, the children have to go into school for 2 weeks. 2 weeks to do mock exams. For 9 months of the year, as a registered childminder, I would see it. I would see it on the children I look after. And it's just flipping cruel, you know. It's cruel. Okay, every school should be a good school. If I live beside the likes of St. Coleman's or the Sacred Heart, I can't go to that school. I had to go away across the town. That is mad. Mad. Crazy, crazy stuff. It's just... Every school, if you look at St. Paul's, look at St. Mark's, look at St. Malachy's, what's wrong, you know? This is crazy, crazy stuff. I know, but my point is, Councillor, if...
Right, we had Jerry's proposal, which was seconded by who?
Leon.
And we had Declan's proposal, which was a direct negative against. So it's as simple as to warn against. But there are a couple of things that Andy had said. One of them wasn't that we write to the Education Board. There's a couple of things here and that have been taken note of.
Yeah.
And we could ask maybe Jerry would include them in his proposal.
Yeah, sure. So I think Sarah has emailed the amendments, proposed amendments from the councillor to all councillors, and it really is around wording. So it's up to Jerry whether he is to accept those amendments. Have you received those, or
is this accepting Andy's? Is it? Yes, I do, Andy. Yeah.
So you're accept. So if I read those out, just so as everybody knows what has been proposed and seconded, is that okay? Yep. So it would be that this council notes the role of Martin McGuinness and the legislative action of Sinn Féin Education Minister Katrina Rowan on 4th of December 2007 in abolishing the official 11 plus exam, the continued practice by schools of administering unregulated transfer tests, as well as the unregulated private tuition industry, which further augments societal divides. The State of Human Rights and Academic Selection in Northern Ireland report by the Organisation Participation and Practice of Rights, which documents the profound mental health impacts which transfer tests are having on children, including issues of sleep, loss of appetite, crying, anxiety, depression and not attending school for fear of a test. Council further notes the findings from the State of Human Rights and Academic Selection in Northern Ireland report, and then it goes on to list the various percentages as noted in your agenda, the 60, 66, 62, 92 and 88%. And finishes with, this council calls on schools to end the use of transfer tests and put the needs of children first.
So it's a simple for and against, and that's what I'm ruling on it. It's a simple for and against. His was a direct negative to it, which it's not an amendment. So it's a for and against. Yep. Do you want clarity or something?
I
Well, then you can vote against it.
We need the microphones to be on. Chair, the member's microphone's not on, so it's not been picked up by the
Chair, it's the same point coming in. We simply, and from everybody that spoke on this issue, everyone is on the same page on this. But I mean, for us to pass the buck politically after inaction, we can note the abolition of the exam, but we must also note that consecutive assemblies and governments have put nothing in its place. And I mean, think, coming into the mouth of an election, what people or what schools are going to say as well. Headmasters already having a go at politicians for having no assembly up there. Are we seriously sending a message from this council that it's the school's fault that the transfer test, and calling on them to end it? Are we sending out letters to every board of governors across our council area and calling on them as if it's their... they're taking the direction from the minister. And the last minister reversed the direction in 2016, which the previous minister in 2015. We are sending out muddled messages to schools. They are enacting what is sent out from the assembly, and then we as a council are going to call on the schools to tell you act up. I mean, we have some neck. So I would propose, on the basis of that, that we need to note the report, and we would actually write to the department where they can send out guidance, calling, and actually focus on the muddled messages that have been sent out with the lack of an assembly and an executive now, to write out to schools. We know that the Catholic Church have written to all Catholic educated schools asking them to stop the use of transfer tests. But it needs to come from above, because so all the Board of Governors are going to say we're following directions. Yeah, I really think...
Is that a different proposal?
Yeah, I really think for us to call on schools to end it is really disingenuous. Well, and I think we get it in the neck and rightfully so. Well, you know what? To abolish an exam, leave nothing in the way it can tell the schools it's their problem. I mean, that is lack of political leadership. And I mean, every education minister from 2002 should be ashamed. I'm telling you, there'll be a U-turn done on this, because the schools, for us to say it's the schools' fault, bloody hell, hey. The schools are only following what we told them to do. And either way, I would have been happy with the 2015 regulations that you don't teach it. And as Barra was talking, we don't teach it in the Crossland Primary School. But that has been reversed in 2016. They have to enact it. Unless we put something else in place.
Of course they do. Here we are.
Sure. I think what has been suggested is a further amendment, and that is that the council write to the department to send out guidance to schools on the use of transfer tests.
Yeah.
I think it's up to the proposer whether they accept that further amendment.
I'd ask the proposer, would he withdraw the line about calling on schools?
It's calling the schools
is causing the...
I'm trying to get that done.
It's only right that we send out clarity, because that's... No, but I'm just saying,
Jerry, whose microphone's still on? Jerry.
No, I'm not accepting that.
Right, okay. So we're voting on Jerry's proposal. For or against? Show of hands. For Jerry's proposal.
With the amendment from Councillor McMurray.
Yeah. Those against? That's it, Carrie.
Abstentions?
Any abstentions? No.
Okay, the motion is carried.
Can I ask, Chair, are we going to write to all the schools?
Chair, there's no reference within.
Item number 19 now, the location of welfare appeals. Michael? Well, this is my number here.
It's
up to Michael. It doesn't matter what the number is. It's up to Michael. The motion is location of welfare appeal. Michael. There you are.
Thank you. Chair, the motion reads, this council calls on the appeal service to cease the practice of holding welfare appeals at local courthouses, states that these venues are unacceptable for such tribunals, as it further traumatizes already vulnerable appellants. Furthermore, that this council goes about investigating the possibility of offering council facilities for such tribunals to negate the need of appellants being forced into court settings. Council notes the protracted delays in getting appeals heard and calls on the Chief Executive to write to the head of the Appeals Service, NI, and the Permanent Secretary for DFC, requesting an immediate review of venues for such appeals and the formation of a review panel tasked with addressing the unacceptable delays to appeals being heard. Chair, the motion virtually speaks for itself, and I bring it tonight to this chamber with a real sort of palpable sense of anger. Anger that on top of all the pressures that have been heaped on vulnerable people in our society in the form of welfare reform, that we are now applying another layer of oppression on those vulnerable people. It's very easy when you walk in to these venues with appellants, as I'm sure many of people in this room have done so in recent months, that those people who are vulnerable, some of them have learning difficulties, some of them have real illnesses, and some of them are both mentally and physically unfit for work. And yet, after the trauma, the sheer trauma of coming through what we all have known as being the Capita assessment system, where many of them are effectively hoodwinked out of the benefits that they're entitled to, have to then go through the traumatic experience of walking into the courthouse feeling like a criminal and been asked to justify why they're not fit for work. Some of them, in some cases, walking in with walking sticks and just about making it to the door out of breath. Chair, this system, the current system, is a disgrace and needs immediate review. And that's why in the motion tonight I've asked for a review panel to be set up. And I hope that all members tonight will see the merits in the motion that's been put forward. Just to touch base on how traumatic this experience could be. Within the last month alone, I have accompanied a woman, a mother of a 20-year-old man who suffers from Duchenne's muscular dystrophy and has lived well past his initial life expectancy. I know those members in the chamber would appreciate the challenges that some people in society facing that condition faces. This woman would look after her son morning, noon, and night. And the compelling element to her story was that on top of that, she developed breast cancer and went through three very severe operations, and as a result of that, struggled to lift her right arm. That woman, when she went through the Capita system, got 0 points for daily living allowance and 0 points for mobility. And I went in to fight her case with her, and beforehand had to forewarn her of what she was walking into, because I knew a woman who's in a vulnerable position, emotionally and physically, would find that experience harrowing. And my God, she did. Now, we won the case, but she walked in through barriers, had to give all the metal contents of her handbag and everything else out, and walked in to courtroom number 5 in Uri Courthouse, where she was met by 3 professional people. One a legal professional, one a disability doctor, and one a mental health doctor. And only that I had spent the time in prepping her for what she was going into, she managed to get through it. She came out afterwards, and we went across the road to the office where I would operate, and she literally collapsed in a heap in floods of tears and told me it was the worst experience of her life. Subsequently, she's been awarded full daily living allowance and standard mobility. So in 2 cases, the system got it badly wrong. One, they got it badly wrong in the way they assessed her. And I believe until such times as the whole Capita system is done away with, we will never have social justice in our society. And secondly, she was traumatized, treated like a criminal, and had to go through a 45-minute ordeal to justify what she was entitled to. The only good side of this is she's 3 years before she has to go through the whole rigmarole again. But the point I'm making, Chair, is this. We have a council that has a lot of facilities, a lot of rooms. We've 2 fantastic new leisure centres with meeting rooms and everything else in them. And we've all the facilities scattered right across the district. And the practice at the minute of having courthouses in Downpatrick and Uri as venues for these welfare-type tribunals and appeals is very badly wrong. And I think we have a duty. We have a civic duty to look after those vulnerable people in our society and offer a more neutral venue that those people don't feel that they're walking in to be treated like criminals. The vast majority of the appeals that I have taken in recent years have been successful because the system is very badly broken. And on top of that, Chair, just to add to that, the ordeal that's been put through the appeal service has also been compounded further by a decision by the Permanent Secretary from April this year under the guise of GDPR that when an appellant goes in, they have to go and get their hands on their own medical records. It is now on the onus on the most vulnerable people in our society to provide their own medical records. And on top of that, they're asked to read them and redact them so that there's no third-party information on those records. Some of these people, in some cases, have very poor literacy, and yet they're expected to go through documents 2-3 inches thick, wade through them, and be able to identify what is known as a third-party person within that document. Something is very badly wrong. I'm asking for a unanimous support tonight from the members in this chamber to send a very strong message to the Appeals Service in Northern Ireland and DFC that you've got this badly wrong and it's inhumane what you're asking people to go through, and it has to stop now. And part of that solution, I believe, Chair, is for this council to investigate the possibility of working with the Appeals Service to provide venues that are neutral and more welcoming to people who are already going through a very difficult time. Some of them, in some cases, have had to wait 18 months. And that brings me to the other point in relation to the long delays. The system's so badly broken that people, when they go to look for the medical records, are going into their GPs, and GPs, without any funding available to them, have to find the administrative staff to pull all these records out. As a result, nine times out of ten, when you go to look for the records, you're going in as well to look for an adjournment. And somebody is having something that they're not wanting to go to at all kicked further and further down the road without money in some cases until their appeal is heard. That case that I talked about was something that was well over a year. There was over £4,000 of a hit that woman had to take on top of the pressure of going in and dealing with her own illness and looking after her child. Over £4,000, and then having to go through that ordeal to get what she's entitled to. Chair, you know, there were mistakes made, I firmly believe, here in bringing this welfare system in. I'm not going to re-rehearse that because people have different opinions on it. The bottom line is it's here and we need to get rid of it. And I'm hoping and praying to God that whatever happens in the next Westminster election, that there's some government that will cop themselves on and get rid of this system. But, Chair, I'm asking tonight for support for this motion that the council takes the necessary steps and provides venues potentially for these appeals, and also that we send a strong message that there's a need for a view panel to look at this and deal with the backlog. And I commend the motion, Chair. Thank you.
Have you got a second or that?
All right.
Chair.
William.
Chair.
Thank you, Chair. William.
Yes, Gloria, you second. Chair, in relation to the motion, we as a party will be totally supporting it. And I commend Councillor Savage for bringing this forward, because it is a brutal system at the minute. As someone who works in the constituency office in Ballinahinch, we have a girl working full time, sometimes doing, believe it or not, 50-60 hours a week on these appeals. And I totally agree with Councillor Savage when he speaks about courthouses and having appeals in courthouses. That is degrading. It is degrading for the person that's going. We have had a number of people who refused to go in because they felt that they were being classed as criminals, and they were frightened that maybe some of their neighbours would see them and think they were up at court for something. And that's the reality and the fact of it. You know, these people need somewhere secure to have their appeals, not in the full glare of a courthouse with other people there, maybe for court cases and that, and seeing them get in. And I would totally support, and our party totally supports, that council hopefully look in to seeing if there's any way that we can help this situation by giving rooms, whatever we have, as we said there, two large community facilities. We have state-of-the-art
facility here, which I'm sure we could find rooms for the appeal service when they do want to go. I do know that they do at times use the business park out the Belfast Road, but numerous occasions they've had to go to Down Patrick Courthouse, which is totally unacceptable. But I would ask Councillor Savage, would he accept one way amendment? And what that amendment is, that we write to the other 10 councils and ask them to support this motion too. Because I believe that if we, as a council and the other 10, send 11 letters to the department, it'll lend more weight to it. So it will. So we have 11 councils asking for this, not just Newry, Mourne and Down. And I'd ask Councillor Savage, hopefully, to accept that motion. But we support the motion.
Laura.
Thank you, Chair. I'm delighted to support this motion. It's extremely worthy and I'm glad it's here before us this evening. I've been representing constituents at Zenith Tribunals for nearly 16 years and found the use of courthouses which came in, actually when I was an attorney last time, wasn't happening prior to that, came back and found it just absolutely appalling that tribunals were taking place in these courthouses. And I know that Billy and Michael have mentioned, but for anyone who has to endure a tribunal, they know how emotive and traumatic these tribunals can be. The questions are so unbelievably personal. I mean, most of the tribunals I go to, generally speaking, there's tears at every single tribunal. So what's already a very difficult day is a day compounded by having to enter a court setting and maintain as a criminal. I've been at tribunals in Dunpatrick Courthouse and in Newry Courthouse and feel that forcing a claimant who is simply availed of their right of appeal to appear at a courthouse is unacceptable. And in terms of these delays are only set to worsen when the litigation runs out in a few months' time. So it's imperative that whatever action is taken now, we can try and put this to bed. And I've mentioned this before in this chamber, you know, society is judged on how we look after the most vulnerable. So in that regard, it's vital that this process, the posting tribunals and court setting ceases and ceases immediately. Thank you, Chair.
Before we bring the next speaker in, everybody has to give us a sympathy for people who have to have their tribunals heard in the courtroom. And we've been saying that for as long as we can try to remember. But the thing to remember is, not every half person could through the door of a courthouse is a criminal.
Mm. Chair? Yep, sorry. Yep.
Go ahead.
Sorry, thank you, Chair. I wholeheartedly support the motion. I've spoke to Councillor Savage, and just a wee addition to it as well, that the Council also to explore the use of disability charities' premises in order to host appeals, as these are less formidable venues, more informal settings, the staff are accustomed to welcoming and receiving people and putting them at their ease. The whole process, as I'm sure many people here know, it's not a simple matter to negotiate. Indeed, on reading the correspondence you receive sometimes from the department, it very often requires two or three readings by two or three people in which to gauge an understanding of what information the department actually wants. I've had experience of both the courthouse and the anonymous room in a business estate. In neither place, the applicant feels any sense of ease due to their own familiarity. You have a legal expert, a medical expert, a clerk of session, and a representative from the department sitting across from you, someone who is merely trying to right the perceived wrong. No matter how well you prepared you are, by being in unfamiliar surroundings, especially with the gravity associated with the courthouse, it can throw people off kilter. And as Mike Tyson said, everyone has a plan until they get a punch in the face. An appeal held in the courthouse can be the metaphorical punch in the face, and your plan goes out the window. It's a completely unsettling process for which to go through. And this is what this motion is about, and it should be about, and I think that's the issue, is that tipping the balance, tipping the power back in the favour of those going through this motion, or this process in regards to this motion. And again, as pointed out as well, it is a terrible process. It doesn't stop for people at the end of the hearing or the tribunal. Many of these people can find themselves with medical conditions that haven't improved, they're not going to improve, and yet they're being called back in again in 6 to 18 months. I mean, it's just a terrible process. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks,
Chair. Well, Sinn Féin will be happy to support your motion, Councillor Savage. I don't think I need to labour the point, which you've all made so far, that courts are just not the right place for people to be going in and having their appeals heard. The whole system is just demoralising for the most vulnerable people in our society. It's putting them into further financial, mental and emotional hardship, and then to expect them to go into a courthouse again is just further adding to that blow. It would be noted that I do agree with what Andy's saying with regards to the disability, but many of our council facilities already have disability access, which is a lot better than... Yeah, I know, I get where you were coming from, but, you know, the be more lend itself better than a courthouse, basically, so we've got lists, etc. And in regard to the motion, you know, Citizens Advice have already highlighted this last year in Newry. They obviously would deal with this more so probably than a lot of elected reps, because that would be the first port of call for a lot of people. And they had launched a petition last year, which, as I say, highlights this issue. So it's, I think it's important for us as a council to back it up. Thank you.
David.
Chair, thanks. I'll be brief also, say a lot of the points have been already highlighted in respect of the motion. Certainly we will be supporting the motion. I think it's a very worthy motion. I thank Councillor Savage for bringing it forward tonight. I work as a welfare support officer, and I participate in these appeals on a very regular basis, and it's certainly clear that the courts aren't an ideal place for them to be hosted. I've certainly even had some concerns even about the use of business centres sometimes, but certainly one of the places that I would attend in terms of a business centre, the constituents or clients are expected to wait at the main entrance to that centre for the world and the mother to come in. You're sitting on a pile of notes. There's no privacy. There's no dignity to it. And it's certainly not acceptable to have these type of appeals, which are a very distressing, very harrowing experience at times for people, for them to be waiting on that such a situation. And I think anything that we can do as a council to try and mitigate that and try and help that, we should do that. And again, even as I mentioned about the delays, I certainly know one case that I was dealing with for a constituent where he waited nearly a year for his appeal to take place. That's not acceptable. For someone to sit in that length of time to know where they stand in terms of their benefits, it's just not on. But anything that we can do as a council to highlight it, and again, Willie's suggestion about writing to the other councils would also back that up. It would certainly help to apply pressure on government departments to move on this. And certainly, I think it's clear that everyone does support it as it stands.
Thank you. Chair, yeah, I was just wanting to sort of speak on this as well and thank Councillor Savage for bringing this forward. I was first elected to council in May of this year, and I had some prior knowledge of these type of tribunals from working in previous jobs and previous roles, but I had no idea at the inhuman nature of these things. And having to sit in a constituent's house when the constituent's in tears, shaken and visibly moved by the fact that she's received a letter to say that she has to attend a court, it's a basic right to challenge these appeals. And quite frankly, there's sometimes that I have read them, and the decisions that were originally made are that shockingly bad that the decision officers should be embarrassed that this is actually going to the tribunal in the first place. But whoever come up with this idea of having these things in courts should be utterly ashamed, because as then Councillor Walker rightly said, the constituent and yourself are walking into court, and the street can see them, their neighbours can see them, and everybody else who's present can see them, and they don't know why they're there, but they're there to challenge a decision that they feel was undue, and it relates to their health. And the point there too, I think was made by Councillor Savage about the appealant also having to receive their own notes from their GP. Some of them don't understand these notes. They don't grasp the importance of some of them, and it does take up an awful lot of time for councillors and for advice officers, particularly when they're a big, large pile of notes to go through them. But the degrading nature of me as a 30-year-old fella having to sit with a woman and go through her personal medical notes in order to try and get her the benefits and the social help that she needs. The whole system, sure, is just shocking and degrading and completely needs an overhaul. And look, yeah,
along to the other councillors would back the council, making space available and allowing these tribunals to take place in a safe environment and somewhere where the constituent feels that they're safe.
Chair, I'm absolutely delighted, Michael, our Councillor Savage has put this forward. I've been out in the courthouse recently myself for a few people. It's challenging enough for people to deal with what they have to deal with without having to go out to the courthouse. So I think it's a great motion and I'm certainly supporting. Thanks, Chair.
Michael, there's a couple of amendments that were read out to you if you want to accept them or not.
Yes, Chair, I'm quite prepared to take both of them. I think they're very reasonable and happy to accept both of them.
Just for the others to clarify what they were, that Councillor Walker proposed that we amend and include writing to all the councils, and Councillor McMurray proposed that you include the in the letter the explanation of the use of disability charities premises to host appeals as either less formidable venues, more informal settings for staff who are accustomed to welcoming and receiving people and putting them at their ease.
No issue with those, Chair.
Happy enough.
Do you want to sum up?
Is it, you're happy enough with it?
Yes, Chair, just to thank all the members right across the parties for their support, including independents. You know, at the end of the day, this system doesn't ask you who you are or what you are. It asks a lot more probing questions. But Chair, you know, this is the right thing to do, and I think we need to send a strong message to the Appeal Service and the Department. I would just ensure that in the letter we're sending, it's not just to the Department, it's also to the Appeal Service Northern Ireland, because they're two separate entities feeding off each other. And I'm hopeful that all the members will keep the pressure on the Appeal Service and the Department to make the necessary changes. And I thank the members for their support. Thank you.
So are we all in agreement? Yes. Thank you very much for that. The last one is a motion from Councillor Liz Gimmons, opt-out organ donation.
Thanks, Chair. And it's been a long night, so we'll try and keep this fairly brief, but I think it's a very important motion. So the motion just states that this council will support the introduction of soft opt-out organ donation legislation here in the North, which will follow the example led by the introduction of the same legislation in Wales in 2015, Scotland and England in 2020, and the calls from the Minister of Health on the side of Ireland, Simon Harris, for the same to be introduced there. So as you can see, we here in the North are the only area across the island of Ireland and Britain that isn't working towards the introduction of soft opt-out organ donation legislation. Soft opt-out organ donation is a system where it is assumed everyone has given the consent to be an organ donor unless otherwise stated. Currently, we only have the opt-in system. In the event of death with the soft opt-out system, next of kin do have the final say whether or not organs are donated, but I do believe it's a conversation that we need to be having with our loved ones in terms of what our wishes are. Research shows that countries with a soft opt-out system in place lead to a higher number of organ donations. I think now is the time, again, for us as a council to call for the introduction of this legislation here in the North. And it's not just a call for legislation to be introduced, but for a high-profile communication and awareness-raising strategy to begin pre- and post-introduction. It would also be a call for further investment in our health system to bring about the recruitment of specialist organ donation nurses and for further investment in our intensive care units. Whilst this is a legislative issue which needs to be addressed if and when the institutions are back up and running, I'm asking that we, across all our parties, encourage our members, our support base and wider society to register themselves as organ donors in the absence of soft opt-out legislation and begin to have those sensitive conversations. The significance of organ donation is that one organ donor could potentially save up to 9 lives. Here in the North, 45% of the population are registered organ donors. Figures also show that there are approximately 133 people waiting on the transplant list at this present time. Last year, unfortunately, 14 people died before they could get a transplant. This motion has been supported by Martin and Steph McGowan, the parents of 3-year-old Dahi McGowan, who was diagnosed with a very rare heart condition called hypoplastic left heart syndrome, and he now requires a heart transplant to save his life. Dahi has been on the waiting list since the 1st of June 2018 and is one of 15 people awaiting a heart transplant here in the North. Dahi's parents have subsequently established the Donate for Dahi campaign, which has been extremely successful in raising local awareness and has received significant support from the community and a number of other councils in the North. Let's as a council work towards increasing the number of people who are registered as organ donors and increase the chances of the likes of young Dahi and others to get the much needed organ donation that they need. This is a very emotive and sensitive topic that we're talking about, and it is unfortunate that it needs to result in the death of someone for an organ donation to come forward. But when there is an organ donor, life springs from death. Sorrow turns to hope and a terrible loss. Thanks, Chair.
You second that motion?
Yes, Chair. Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be able to second Liz's motion, and I thank her for bringing it forward. I think also just I would like to give a nod of thanks and appreciation to the staff that we have, especially in the renal unit in Daisy Hill Hospital, which is absolutely superb at what they do, where they are literally keeping people alive from, you know, 1 week to the other, but they are exceptional at what they do. This is something that is very personal to my own family, as a couple of years ago I had a nephew, a beautiful big fine 15-year-old, 6 foot tall, doing his at school playing football, was diagnosed with having cardiomyopathy. And whenever he was diagnosed, he was actually too ill to go on the transplant list. And over the last 2.5 years, where all his peers have moved on and have actually started university, his life has been just left in limbo. While he has tried to continue on with his education, it is continually disrupted as his condition fluctuates. As an 18-year-old, he can't drive. He's not able to move on with his education. He can't play a sport. He went to his formal a couple of weeks ago. He's not allowed to drink alcohol. And many of the drugs that he takes to keep him alive have devastating side effects. So, you know, as I said, it's something that is very personal to myself. The other thing that I have to point out, that every family that knows the only cure for their member is a transplant, we know very well that another family has to suffer the death of a person in order to save our loved one's lives. And that is something that is very difficult for us as a family and for my nephew to get his head around, because we are very well aware that that is the sacrifice that someone else will make. But the reality of it is, very few people ever die in the situation where they can become donors. And again, as a parent, you know, none of us imagine ever being in that situation where maybe one of our children would have an accident or be in that situation. And we can only imagine the horror of having to make decisions in that terrible time. And to be quite, you know, I never really thought about organ donation until this happened to my nephew. And I'm a bit squiffy about my eyes, so I have told my own children, let them use whatever they want, but please don't touch my eyes. And that is the option that people have. You know, and I think that the important thing that Liz has said is we need to talk about this, because the potential of saving so many lives, you know, the potential of giving someone sight, a child that can't see, the potential to help them see, you know, to be able to save lives out of tragedy is an absolute gift. And while I hope it's something that I never have to do, because I don't wish any traumatic events on to anybody that close to me, I think I personally would feel some form of comfort from it. But I think it's a conversation we need to have, and I thank Liz for taking this motion forward. And again, I think that our council, all facilities actually should have information about becoming a donor, you know, because that is how we spread the word and educate people. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks, Liz, for bringing this to the attention. I think from our party's perspective, yes, we definitely support this. It's a very emotive issue. I have two personal friends whose children, one who actually, thankfully, has had a transplant, and one who is waiting. And as Councillor McGrew had said, it is quite an emotive situation, because we know what has to happen for that aspect of it. I know the Medical Association has been calling this for quite some time now. I know that they are frustrated in regards to trying to get this legislation through within the devolved government. I think it's important to note, as Councillor Cummins has said, last year alone, between 13 to 14 people, while waiting for an organ, died. And it's just not, it's not acceptable. I think Ms. Council will agree with saying as well, we need to be bring this further more. It needs to be out in the open more, and we need to bring in it, quite rightly so, information within the council areas and throughout. And hopefully at some point that there will be legislation put in place within the north of Ireland to call on and complement as well the whole of Ireland as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much for bringing this motion forward. In the UK, let me expand on that statistic. In the UK, 400 people died last year waiting on organ donations. That's 408 sons and daughters, mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters. Just imagine if it was your relative. That's 400 people who have had to watch their lives slipping away from them or their relatives and must sit there and watch this, knowing that this is due to something that can essentially be prevented through organ donation. As someone who is on the donor register myself, as well as my husband, and someone who works in health, I have seen firsthand the distress caused by those patients and relatives going through this process. I have seen people die of heart failure, and believe me, it's horrific to stand back and watch. As a health professional, I am powerless, and the relatives just sit there also feeling powerless. According to the British Heart Foundation, we currently have 133 people in Northern Ireland waiting on organ donations. 16 of those are waiting on heart transplants. This is terrible time for those people, made worse by the lack of donors. The pain and suffering is insurmountable. According to the British Heart Foundation study, 69% of NI residents agree with the automatic opt-in. It is important to understand it is an easy process to opt out. It is a simple online form or a phone call, and the family will be involved in all donations before they occur, allowing for people's faith and beliefs to be considered. As Roisin said, you can even decide what individual organ to exclude from donations. So if you don't want to donate your eyes, you can opt out from that particular organ. Make no mistake, this will have a positive effect on many lives, and it is for this reason the DUP will be supporting this motion.
Chair, thank you. The Ulster Unionist Party will also be supporting the motion. It's something that's actually very close to my heart as well. In August last year, I lost a cousin who was very close to me. She was receiving treatment at the renal unit in Daisy Hill Hospital, and I also want to pay a tribute to the work that they do. It's tremendous, and they offer great support to families at a difficult time. My cousin was required a kidney transplant, but unfortunately her health deteriorated to such extent where she just didn't make it. But others can and others do, and we certainly should do all that we can to ensure that as many lives are saved as possible. It's clear that organ donation does save lives, and increasing the rate of organ donation will be allowed would allow our medical staff to save even more here. Our party supports soft opt-out option. It's positive that others do as well now. And the reality is that Northern Ireland does have the most outdated organ donation system in the UK. And I suppose I would like to pay a tribute to Joanne Dobson as well, who's a former MLA for our party. She did try to implement legislation regarding organ donation, which unfortunately didn't go through at a time when Wales already had the system in place, and that England, Scotland and the Republic of Ireland were at that time in the process of following suit. While public support for organ donation across Northern Ireland remains high, around 90% I think the figure stands at, just over 40% of the local population are actually on the organ donation register. And as has been mentioned, around 14 people per year do tragically pass away on the waiting list, and lives are needlessly being lost. In the absence of a local executive, our party had called on the UK government to expand their plans for the soft out system, similar to England, which would also include our country, but regrettably that didn't happen. But we must find an opportunity to transform our laws here as well, and as I've already said, anything that our council can do to improve that situation and to highlight that situation, we should do that, and I'm very glad to see that everybody in the chamber this evening seems to be supporting that concept as well.
Andy.
Yeah, so thank you, Jared. I'll not be long. We're supporting the motion, very happy to support and very grateful to brought forward. Again, echoing a few of the sentiments, you know, I go to quite a few conversations. I think there's sadly quite a few children in this council area waiting for lists for donations. So we're wholeheartedly supporting and help them. But that's again highlighted, it's not a simple solution. It's not a simple decision. It's going to take a lot of reflection, a lot of working out, and a very difficult and complicated subject. Given that the healthcare issue has been dealt with in England, Scotland, Wales, I'm certainly happy to see the replicating of this scheme throughout these islands. And again, echoing what's been said as well, perhaps a tangible thing which we as council should do is raise awareness of organ donation. And if council officers keep this in mind, if opportunities were to arise that can work in tandem with such promotion. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I suppose I should have mentioned as well that Roisin is one of the last things she did in her role as chairperson, had a fantastic event around organ donation last May in the town hall. It's something that really struck me because we had families who had been recipients of organ donations. We'd also families who their loved ones who had passed away had donated organs, and were able to see where the benefits of that, and also people on the wait list. So I think that in itself was very important in helping to raise awareness. Just want to thank everybody for the unanimous support here tonight. When I was asked by Dahi's family to bring this motion to council, I couldn't not. It really struck a chord. Me having my own Dahi at home, so I can't imagine how any family would feel having to face that situation. So just again, thank everyone for their support.
We all agree then with that motion. Yeah. Thank you very much for that. That's it. Thank you. That's bad. That's a big name.